Hello, and welcome to the Glossy Beauty Podcast. I'm your host for today, Emma Sandler, beauty and wellness editor for Glossy. I've been covering the beauty industry for over 5 years now, and one thing I've quickly learned was how attractive beauty is for outside investors like private equity and venture capital firms. So it feels rare when I come across a household name that turns out to be 100% bootstrapped, meaning without any outside investors. This is especially the case for the Rhodiol Group, which houses brands Rhodiol and Nip & Fab. The company is turning a profit and aims to reach $50 million in revenue for the next fiscal year. Leading the helm at the Rhodiol Group is founder and CEO, Maria Hatzis-Stefanos. Maria, welcome to the show.
Hi, Emma. Thanks for having me.
It's such a pleasure. Where are you calling in from?
I am calling in from London, our headquarters here in the UK, and it's a sunny Friday afternoon.
Wonderful. Thank you. So tell me a bit about the history of the Rhodiol Group. I don't know what the origin story is, but I know that it's been around for some time.
So I was born in Greece, and since I was a young girl, I was into fashion and beauty. 10 years old, I was buying all the international styling and fashion magazines and taking it all in. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, but I knew I wanted to be in the world of glamour and live this international life. So I studied English literature in Athens, where I'm originally from. And while I was doing that, I found a job as a freelance beauty and fashion writer for a 17 magazine, which I was doing while I was studying. I graduated and I felt I needed to get into business in some capacity. So I moved to New York and I did an MBA at Columbia Business School. I still didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and all my classmates were going into banking or consulting. So I decided I'm going to pursue banking, and I got an offer that brought me to London to work in an investment bank doing mergers and acquisitions. So I did that for a couple of years and I learned a whole lot. But at the end of it, I became a very bad employee. I wasn't turning up on time. I wasn't doing my job properly. And not surprisingly, one day I was called in the boardroom and I got fired. And it was devastating because I was in my early 20s. But that was the best thing that ever happened to me. And it made me think what I wanted to do with my life. I went back into some of the best memories that I had, which was when I was writing for beauty. And that's when I decided I saw a gap in the market and I want to launch my own beauty brand. That was 25 years ago. So that's what brought me into beauty. The gap that I identified at the time, and imagine this is 25 years ago, there wasn't much around. There were just a bunch of big brands with a basic cleanser, moisturizer, and that was all. So my idea was to come up with products that would give you instant and long-term results. And I had the passion of researching ingredients that no one else was using. So some of our best sellers over the years were the snake serum, the dragon's blood sculpting gel, the bee venom, and Rhodiol gained excitement and buzz at a time where virality wasn't what it is right now by using those unusual ingredients and naming the products after them. So that's how it all started.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. So I mentioned that there's Rhodiol and Nip & Fab. Tell us a bit about each of these brands, how they sort of differ from one another.
So I started Rhodiol 25 years ago. That is the core of our business. That's how it all started. And 10 years ago, I was getting a lot of calls from the mass market asking about Rhodiol. And there were so many calls that I thought there is an opportunity for a spin-off from Rhodiol that has some of the similar ingredient stories and powerful ingredients, but then be formatted in a way that is more mass market. So originally, Nip & Fab was created as a spin-off to Rhodiol to service a different market. But then very quickly, it developed its own identity. We've done campaigns with Kylie Jenner, with Sofia Richie, and it has become over the years as the iconic skincare brand for the Gen Z generation. And over the years, the ingredients differentiated massively. So now Nippon Fab has its own brand identity. We have a different team running it. But that's how it all came together. And now we are running both brands under the same portfolio, under the same office, but we have different teams driving each brand.
So with that in mind, tell me a bit about sort of where the Rodeo Group business stands today in terms of that size and distribution and all the other elements of it.
So between our two brands, we are available in over 10,000 stores worldwide and 35 countries. The Rodeo brand is distributed in luxury department stores, the likes of Harrods, Selfridges, Neiman Marcus, Blue Mercury. And Nippon Fab is more about the Boots, the Super Drugs, the JCPenney. So two different propositions, two different distribution channels. Over the years, the key to the business is growth, but also profitability. So we have been growing on a double-digit growth year after year for both brands as a group. And profitability has been a driver of our business, and we've always been profitable.
That's pretty impressive that you've always been profitable, you know, especially as, you know, I mentioned we've got a very investor-driven space that exists in beauty. And there was a period of time too where it was like, grow as fast as you can, you'll become profitable later. Talk to me. I mean, was that always something you had to focus on, you wanted to focus on? I'm curious about your experiences, given that it's been a through line throughout the history of the company.
So over the years, we have been approached by various companies and trade buyers interested in whether investing in the business or buying the business. We never really had a proposition that was interesting enough for me to take the jump, because I've always been used to doing my own thing, not having to report to anyone, doing what feels right. Sometimes the decisions that I've made were quite, quite bold, and decisions that potentially an external investor wouldn't have agreed with. But sometimes I know deep down what's right for the business. Now, when you don't have external investment, that means that you can only reinvest in the business what you have. You can reinvest the profit. You cannot invest more than that, which means that you can't really drive the business to grow by 50% every year. That is impossible if you don't have a massive marketing budget. But then that means that you are a lot more flexible. You use guerrilla marketing tactics, or you use ways to drive that revenue, and that ROI has to be there. So you're taking risks. You are doing whatever you can to grow the brand awareness, but keeping in mind that you have to be profitable. So it's a balance between, yes, we want to grow, but we don't want to grow to the point that we cannot support that. And for that reason, and not having that external investment, we were able to be profitable year after year.
Of course. Would you ever consider at this point kind of taking outside investment, or even possibly selling the company, depending on, you know, if you have the right number, the right partner, et cetera?
Well, we have two brands, so that would be two different propositions. Nippon Fab, you know, we've had a lot of interest over the years. And that is an amazing Gen Z profitable brand with great growth that, there's a lot of interest. There's been a lot of interest. Rodeo, I feel, is a little bit closer to my heart. I am Mrs. Rodeo. So I feel that's a little bit closer to me. I feel there's a lot more I can give to the business, that I want to keep it tight and close to me for a little bit longer. So, you know, we're open and see what happens. It's an interesting market out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the case of Rodeo, tell me a little bit more about that customer. Like, who is she or who are they? What's his or her lifestyle too?
The Rodeo woman is a sophisticated woman. She works, she's a mom, she has a lot of things going on in her life. She is looking for a product that could give her results, and she's also looking for shortcuts. So we've developed the core of our business is skincare. But recently, what's been driving a lot of our growth has been complexion, a capsule collection of under eye concealers like the Banana Low Lighter, glow products. You can see my makeup up today, it's all glowing. And my view on doing complexion was, as a busy working mom, I am looking for a handful of products that I can use really quickly. I hate doing my makeup every day, but if I can have key products and get my makeup done and be presentable and feel confident about myself, that is what I want to offer to our customers. So the Rodial Woman has really embraced this idea of, I'm not a makeup artist. I can't even go to a counter where there's thousands of products. I don't even know where to start. And with Rodial, this is what I need. And I can use it, very simple steps, easy to blend. And I can look presentable and confident about myself all the time. So our customer is sophisticated. She is between her 30s and 50s, our core customer. And she is very loyal. She is buying our skincare, but also she is open to experiment with all the new complexion and trending products that we're launching.
I love what you said about complexion and how, you know, you go to a makeup counter and there's hundreds of products. I certainly have had friends, girlfriends coming to me saying, you know, I'm interested in getting into makeup. Where do I start? And usually I don't say you do X, Y, Z. I'm like, well, tell me more about like what it is you're trying to do, this and that, because there's so many different things I could recommend or suggest to them. But I agree, you know, a lot of people are interested, but it's very intimidating. It's intimidating because there's so many different products, techniques, almost like you feel like you have to have a PhD in makeup before you can even touch a makeup brush. So I love that simplicity that you're trying to go for, that sense of ease of being able to use these products, being able to sort of get out the door quickly too.
100%. And that's where it all started. And also there's been this trend, especially on Instagram and Reels, where you see extensive and very, very time-consuming makeup tutorials with lots of layers of products and blending and layers of foundation. And I just find that the modern woman just doesn't have the time or doesn't even care to have that level of perfection in her day-to-day. You know, we all want a few bits of makeup, pick me up, get out the door, and that's it. And I do feel that there's not enough in the market like that. So we do have a loyal customer who's really into it.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with the rest of our conversation. Tell me more about the growth opportunities for Rodial and Nip and Fab too.
So in terms of Rodial, which is where I'm going to be focusing a lot this year, is first of all, we are celebrating our 25th year anniversary. And we also have another landmark celebration, which is the 10th year of our Be Venom launch. So what we have started doing a couple of months ago is going and telling the story of Rodial and Be Venom again. And for me, it's not about just launching new products. It's about what is our heritage, what are the products that have been heroes for us for many years, and go and tell the story again. I was in Milan a couple of days ago, and we hosted a press and influencer event to celebrate the 10th year anniversary. And you would be surprised, no one knew about it. So it kind of goes to show me all these brands that are launching product after product, we just need to tell the story to a new consumer. And I am so against hyper-consumerism and producing for the sake of producing. So that's what we're doing right now, is we are telling the story and we're capturing a new customer who hasn't heard of the Be Venom or Rodial just because when we launched 10 years ago, they weren't into skincare or they weren't within our target market. And that's the plan for us for this year. It's opening our markets and retelling our story.
Well, you have to tell us the story of bee venom.
So, yeah, it's an interesting one. So after we launched Snake Serum and Dragon's Blood, and suddenly Rodial became this brand that's coming up with all these scary sounding ingredients and products, then, you know, I had to keep up. And it's not easy after those two. So I was in LA, and I was reading about this bee sting facial. I was actually reading Gwyneth Paltrow's blog. And I thought, oh, wow, you know, what an amazing facial. She's going to have it. And I went and tried it. And what happens is you're in a room, you're all covered, your face is bare. And a bunch of bees are released, get on your face. Obviously, you get stung, you become all red. And then a couple of days later, your skin feels plumped, lifted, the collagen is running, and your circulation is so much better. You get a beautiful glow. So I thought, what if we were to take that bee venom and put it in a range, and instead of having to endure all that, you know, that very painful facial, let's see what happens if we put it in a cream. So we sourced bee venom, which is ethically sourced as a byproduct of the beehive, and added it to a range. We did the trials and we found it has a very similar effect, the bee venom, when used in a product. So that's how the bee venom range came about. We launched with three products, and now to celebrate the 10th year anniversary, we launched a serum and a night gel. So it's become one of our best-selling ranges, and we're telling the story again.
And saving people from having to do a facial like that for the past 10 years.
Absolutely, yeah. I wouldn't do that again, honestly.
Do you think that's the wildest beauty treatment you've ever tried? You seem like the kind of person who is so willing to experiment with like lots of different things, even if it's kind of a far-flung concept like bee venom.
Yes, I am open to trying different things. I'm also quite scared of all the plastic surgery treatments that I see around me. So I'm not going to be the one first. I am a little bit of a, you know, I'm a bit scared of a lot of what I see around me. But when it comes to wellness, you know, for me, wellness is the way to go. I've recently been doing a lot of cold plunges. That's my latest thing. And it's sort of while I'm in the cold plunge, I'm thinking, how can this be translated into a product? Because I put my face in the cold water and it just reinvigorates everything. So for me, the way to go is look at wellness and bring elements of wellness into beauty. That's definitely something I'm very passionate about.
A lot of brands are introducing things like supplements that have an inside out beauty regimen to it. Is that something you think you'd ever explore for Rodial, since you're interested in wellness?
You know, we were one of the first brands to introduce supplements when we first started. So now I'm talking 15 to 20 years ago. But what we discovered was that supplements are very difficult to export. The regulations, the registration that's needed, and the red tape to get it into other countries was so cumbersome that we decided this is not a market to be in. And for that reason, we're not going to go back in. But, you know, personally, as a consumer, and when I talk to people and share my beauty and my tips, I do take a lot of supplements. So I believe in them as a consumer. But as part of a growth of a pure skincare and complexion brand, I don't think it's the right way to go.
That's very interesting. I had no idea that Rodial had been one of the first to venture into that space. So I'm curious, with that in mind, some of the ways that you're working to keep Rodial fresh and adapt to that changing beauty landscape.
So, you know, with COVID, we all have to start thinking in a very different way. We were historically a classic PR brand. So classic PR with magazines and online articles and Store events was the core of our business. With COVID and just everything going online, we had to quickly move to a D2C format and then embrace digital in a bigger way, whether that was working with influencers or paid social media campaigns. So we had to quickly learn all that. Now we're moving into a new stage that there's a couple of different things we're doing. One is cultivating micro communities in real life and organizing smaller events where we bring group of women together as part of our customer base, whether it's in New York, London, LA, Milan. And we bring those women together and we create networking events and we tell that story. And then the other thing that we are working on right now is do bigger activations. And when we have a product launch, give it a moment. And there's a lot of cool stuff we're working on right now. And for me, activations were you open it up to a bigger consumer audience and you give them the opportunity to come and interact with the brand in a non you have to buy this product way, in a more, this is the brand, we're offering an experience, come share it with us. And if you love it, you know, you can post it on Instagram, tell your friends. And that's where the word of mouth starts. So I'm excited for this new stage that we're getting in. And I think the future is, it's just that in real life activations for the end consumer.
Absolutely. You've mentioned already some of the ways that the Rodeo Group is growing and continuing to expand, but I'm curious how you would categorize or describe what that next phase of growth looks like and where you're kind of finding that growth.
So we're going through an interesting stage right now with Rodeo. For me, historically, the times that I grew were the times that I brought some new people into the business. And we were at the end of a few of our team moved on the last few months. And, you know, for me, this is an opportunity to look again at the leadership team and think, who do we want to be? Who do we want to bring on board? So I'm heavily recruiting on some key areas right now and bringing a different profile of people on board. And I always find with new people, fresh ideas, different experiences, a lot of diversity in the people that we bring in, that's where the growth happens. For me, people and the team is the single most important thing. So with the new team coming on board, there's going to be a lot of brainstorming meetings. There's going to be a lot of excitement and challenging the ways we've been doing things and looking at how we can perform in a different way. So I don't have the answer for you right now, but I feel that when we get the team in place and we move to the next phase of Rodeo, you know, 25 plus 1 years, 26 years. So that will be, it will be a very interesting year with all those changes happening.
You know, I sometimes make a joke when it comes to, you know, an upcoming birthday of mine. I'll joke, oh, it's going to be my second annual 30th birthday. I feel like you can start that too, to sort of really emphasize the either the anti-aging or pro-aging of Rodeo, the second anniversary, the second 25th anniversary. That's how you can, third anniversary. So I'm curious with, in the case of hiring, are there certain key positions that you have filled or are looking to fill? You can consider this podcast free advertisement space for recruitment.
We're very close to hiring within the commercial team and the new product development team. And for me, these are the two teams that I'm mostly closely related to. I even now I do go to stores a few times a month. I spend time on the floor with the team. So the commercial piece is super important for me. It's the heart of the business. And then the new product development team, that's another area that I probably come up with 99% of the ideas, but it would be great to have a team that will help me with that and support with some more ideas that I haven't even thought about. So yeah, these are the two key areas that I'm super excited about.
What interests you right now about beauty these days? Are there certain long-term trends that you have your eye on since you're the one doing the heavy lifting on product development right now?
So for me, it's all about quick fixes. I feel that the time we were all watching tutorials of like the 10-step Korean skincare, I don't think anyone has the time for that. I feel that trends are all about, you know, can I even get a switch and have my makeup on applied immediately? Can I do that? So within skin and makeup for me, it's all about simplifying the routines. It's all about simple products. It's about a lot of hybrid. So can I use, instead of using a serum and a foundation, can I use a serum foundation that will give me all the skincare, will give me a little bit of color, or with our banana low lighter, which is a hybrid between an eye cream and an under eye brightener. So for me, I want more of that as a consumer, and I want to see more of that from beauty, and definitely that's what I'm looking for my brand. What I'm really not into is hyper consumerism. I definitely, we're not one of those brands that will launch 50 products a year and just oversaturate the market. And then out of those 50, probably one would be the bestseller. I feel that there's too much going on in the world right now that we as brands, we need to be supporting the less is more and producing less, and what we're producing needs to have a space and a reason for being.
You mentioned earlier in the case of Bee Phantom that, you know, it's about taking your existing products and marketing them to new customers. It's not that you have to, as a brand, create new products. And I'm curious, in the case of whether it's Bee Phantom or any other franchise that Rodial has, are you looking for younger customers? Are you looking at different subsegments from your core demographic? I'm very curious about that approach you're taking.
We're definitely looking at the core customer, who is 30s to 50s. We are looking into raising brand awareness in different markets right now. So some markets that were underserviced for a very long time, for example, Greece has now become one of our top markets. Reason being, I've done two seasons of Dragon's Den Greece. This is like Shark Tank in the US. So I've gained a lot of visibility in the country, and that really helped for me to launch the brand there. We launched a month ago. And that is a growing market. We're also working with some new distributors in some other European countries. And in the past, it was, okay, let's just sign a deal with a distributor who's going to bring the most money. And now it's not about the money. It's about who are the distributors that we can work with that can create the brand awareness the same way that we operate here in the UK and the US, that are our direct markets. So we are reviewing those relationships, and there's a huge potential if we work with the right people to raise brand awareness. Then that means we still target our core customer, but in different regions and geographical areas that Rodial wasn't a familiar brand up to now.
To finish off the conversation, I'm curious, as you think about all the things you see in the beauty industry today, the market dynamics, the number of brands out there, the difficulty you see as well with, you know, growing a brand. If you were to not have the Rodial Group, but you were thinking about it, do you think it would be possible for you to launch a brand today?
The honest answer is I don't think so. When I started my business 25 years ago, there was nothing. And it wasn't, oh my God, you know, it's so easy to start a beauty brand. Now you can scroll down on Instagram and I see white label, put your name on this product. You can have your brand in 4 weeks. This is scary. The reason I started Rodial and the group is because there wasn't anything niche back in the day. And there was a space and there was a gap that I wanted to fill. It was also a lot more difficult to launch a beauty brand compared to how easy it is now. So, you know, for me, it's a very saturated market. And because I've lived beauty for 25 years, and actually, if anyone wants to hear about my journey, because it's an interesting one, I've written 3 books. My first book, How to Be an Overnight Success, is my whole journey. So if anyone wants more details on how I did it, how I'm here now, you can check it out. But I feel it's a very saturated market. I feel that you really need to have a very clear proposition. You really need to have something different that no one else is offering. But it's getting harder and harder to make it happen. But for me, at the end of the day, even an idea that is average, if the execution is great and the energy and the entrepreneur behind it is not willing to give up, despite the challenges of the market, you can still make it happen. But I have to say, I'm glad I started 25 years ago. It's given me the heritage. It's given me a whole bunch of loyal customers and awareness over the last 25 years. So I'm in a good place. That doesn't mean, though, that I don't have to try. Every single day I have to wake up and think, how can I be relevant? How can Rodial still be the cool brand? So, and it's not easy. You know, I'm here for it.
Yes, certainly not for the faint of heart. Maria, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us, sharing a bit about your journey, sharing the history and heritage of the Rodial Group. We're so appreciative.
Thanks, Emma. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Glossy Beauty Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help us out. And of course, visit glossy.co/beauty for even more coverage of the beauty industry. Sarah Sprook Feiner will be hosting next week. Bye.